Hello, welcome to this RCGP Health Education England Sepsis Podcast. My name is Simon Stockley. I'm the RCGP Clinical Champion for the Sepsis Clinical Priority, and I'm a practicing GP in the northeast of England. I've got with me Rachel Marsden. Would you like to introduce yourself, Rachel?
Hello, my name is Rachel Marsden. I'm the Clinical Support Fellow for the Sepsis Clinical Priority, and I am a first five GP from Sheffield. So, Simon, we're hearing a lot more about sepsis now when we never used to. Why is that?
Sepsis has become fashionable in the last couple of years, both in hospital and more recently in general practice. It's become a focus for improving performance across the health community in much the same way as we've done with DVTs and atrial fibrillation in the past. In the last year, the RCGP has held a series of workshops, and this podcast is going to describe some of the key themes from those.
So going back to basics, Simon, what is sepsis?
Sepsis was redefined last year as a process in which infection and the body's immune response combine to produce life-threatening organ dysfunction. The process is common to almost all lethal infections, and the treatment differs very little according to the source. So the treatment for life-threatening lung or urinary tract or neurological or even skin infections follows very similar paths, even if we call them pneumonia, pyelonephritis, meningitis or cellulitis. Hospitals have become increasingly organised to recognise and aggressively treat possible sepsis with intravenous antibiotics, fluids and oxygen. It's suggested by timely administration and early access to senior clinicians, many lives can be saved.
Okay, so what does sepsis mean for general practice?
Sepsis isn't confined to hospitals. In fact, 70% of cases derive from the community, which gives general practice a real role in decreasing mortality by ensuring that the right patients are picked up at the earliest practical stage and, where appropriate, get rapid access to life-saving therapies. It is hoped that by ensuring more people with potential sepsis are identified at an early stage and that their care is appropriately escalated and treated. The need for this has been brought into sharper focus by a whole series of high-profile cases and reports where failings have been identified with the care provided.
Okay, so you talk about picking it up at the earliest practical stage. Is sepsis hard to miss?
I think sepsis is a real challenge for us all. It doesn't have one pathognomonic feature, such as central Cushing chest pain, and that makes it easier for it to be overlooked and harder to spot. It can develop very rapidly, or it can appear insidiously. It's not always possible to spot which patients with an infection will tip into sepsis in the next 48 hours. So GPs are often accused of having missed something that was obviously there, when this may not be truly the case. It begs the question, really, of how do we recognise sepsis, or for that matter, any person whose condition is deteriorating, and how can we communicate this to patients or relatives who don't have our training or experiences?
Has there been anything new recently that GPs can pull on or use to help their practice?
I think there has. We've had new international definitions of sepsis and recent NICE guidelines, and these have all given us a steer as to what's really important and those features that are most relevant to deciding whether somebody is unwell, those that have actually got a positive predictive value. The international definitions, which were led by Mervyn Singer from the UK, identified that respiratory rate, low blood pressure and altered mentation or cognition are the most highly predictive signs or symptoms of sepsis, that they're more predictive than pulse, temperature or oximetry. Importantly, what they concluded was that the combination of abnormalities in that triad is a much stronger predictor than just one abnormality in its own. So for this case, meatloaf gets it wrong and two out of three is bad.
So what advice has NICE given GPs in the last few years?
NICE also points to abnormal physiological parameters as being of value in identifying possible cases of sepsis. They give their own range of abnormal values for different physiology across different age groups. In hospital, National Early Warning Scores, or NEWS, which gives an aggregated value to a basket of physiological variables, particularly respiratory rate, is being increasingly used to identify patients where sepsis interventions need to be considered, and has been shown to have a greater predictive value than any individual parameter. As such, NEWS is consistent with the international definition for sepsis. Unfortunately, early warning scores have not yet been validated in primary care, and the predictive value of NEWS in general practice is yet to be determined.
So, Simon, what advice would you give to a GP who has a potentially sick patient in front of them?
When I was first taught to recognise sick patients, I was told, you'll know it when you see it. And that was a really unhelpful way to be trained. That as I learnt what it was, I did recognise it when I saw it. And as I've learnt more about sepsis, I recognise that what I'm seeing with the Mark I eyeball is actually abnormal physiology. The person who comes into your room a little more breathless than you might expect and sits down with a puffing, do they have an elevated respiratory rate? You note that they're pale or even perhaps sweating or even cold to the touch. Do they have lowered blood pressure? And whilst taking their history, you can see that they're not actually processing in the way that you would expect them to. Have they got altered mentation? And when you talk to the relative, they say, yeah, it took him half an hour to get dressed today. Yeah. I don't really understand it. So without really examining the patient, you've already made an assessment consistent with abnormal physiology and are recognising sick when you see it. So the thought is that if we know what sick is and know that actually what we're seeing is abnormal physiology, if we pay more attention to physiology, we might get some earlier clues as to who's sick.
So how has this changed your approach to infection in the last few years?
Well, I thought I was pretty good at spotting infection, so I was surprised that it did change my practice. I record more physiology, particularly respiratory rate, blood pressure and capillary refill in unwell patients, whether they're going into hospital or not, so that I can say somewhat objectively as to how sick they were at the point I saw them. It's really useful in a patient with an infection and a really high temperature who you don't really feel needs to be admitted, but they have got a high temperature. So recording all their other physiology can reassure you as to whether they are sick or whether they're not really as sick. And it also gives a baseline for the next clinician who reassesses or reevaluates that person, and they can tell whether that person has deteriorated objectively and may take a different view. I use NEWS as a guide to what is abnormal for an adult because it gives me a range and it gives me some sort of feel for how bad and how deranged that physiology is. I have to be careful because NEWS isn't good with patients who have chronic lung conditions or heart failure. There are patients who quite happily live in the community with abnormal NEWS scores.
Is there any one physical parameter that is more important than others, perhaps, in a deteriorating patient?
It's respiratory rate. It is the most sensitive. It goes up when the body produces more adrenaline, even though the body is compensating in every other physiological parameter. Respiratory rate is the key.
Okay.
And that changes in children as well as adults. So it's a really subtle sign, and it's one that we as GPs don't make a really good habit of recording. But it is the most predictive.
So you've talked a bit about people who are sick, but actually you don't feel they need admission. They can go home quite safely with a plan in place. I suppose a key point of that would be safety netting. And how has your practice towards safety netting changed, or what advice would you give?
Yeah, it has changed. I was very struck meeting the parents of a child with sepsis who said, I didn't know what worse was. When the doctor said, bring them back if they get worse, I really hadn't got a clue what bad was, because as far as I was concerned, my hot child was as unwell as I'd ever seen them.
Okay.
So I'm trying to give them much more advice about what sick looks like, and I'm focusing on those three predictive parameters: breathlessness, are they pale, clammy, looking the way somebody might do just before they're sick, but actually they're staying that way.
Okay.
Because I think that's an experience that most people have seen, somebody who's just about to vomit and is that cold, clammy colour. And then talking to them about confusion or altered levels of consciousness.
You've mentioned news scores a few times already, Simon. Do you use news?
Yes, I do. I've used early warning scores for over 10 years in a lot of my practice. And I find it's a really useful adjunct to my decision making. It doesn't replace clinical judgment at all, but it supports me in validating some of my judgments. It's really useful for communication between myself and, say, ambulance services or hospitals,
okay,
that they understand how sick I mean a patient is when I say, I think this one's really rather sick.
Yeah.
So if you come up with a new score of more than 5 in an A&E department, they know that actually it's got a positive predictive value of 21% death or ITU admission,
wow,
which is pretty convincing as far as I'm concerned, even though the evidence isn't there for general practice. If this person is going to be in an A&E department in 15 minutes' time, I think the value probably translates.
Okay, so how would you, if you were sending a patient to A&E, you've mentioned A&E, you've mentioned ambulances, what do you say to the people on the other end of the phone when you're trying to get across how worried you are?
One of the things that came up in the workshops quite frequently was an experience of GPs saying, I've had real trouble on occasions getting my patient taken to hospital in an ambulance. I've got this guy with pneumonia. I know he's really rather sick, but they don't seem to come in any particular speed, and it's just unpredictable as to what's going to happen. And the conversations we've had with ambulance services, and my own experience having worked with them for 30 years, is that they don't actually think very much about diagnosis. They work on symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to communicate concern is to use the word suspicion of sepsis. And because sepsis does trigger concern for ambulance services, whilst GP patient unwell with chest infection may not rank as high. And now, as ambulance services are adopting news for their own triage purposes, it makes good sense to give them a news score. So my means of communication is very simple. If I'm concerned about them, is I've got a patient who I'm suspecting sepsis in. They've got a news score of 7. I think they probably need to get to A&E fairly promptly. Can you tell me what triage that's come out with? And usually they say, don't worry, doc, the ambulance is already on its way. And I think we've got to use the word suspicion of sepsis.
Okay.
We don't need to be afraid of it. It's not the word Voldemort.
Yes.
So we should use it. And we can use a common language of news scores. So I think that is the top tip for GPs about communication.
So just say sepsis.
Just say sepsis. And if you have the skills to do a news score, use it.
Okay. So you've mentioned the workshops a few times already. Is there anything that particularly came out of the workshops, any sort of take-home messages?
I think what most GPs came away with was that this was something that they are seeing but have been previously calling it something else.
Okay.
So talking about pneumonias, I think respiratory rate is something that we do poorly and need to be much slicker about, and that we can tidy up our communication with ambulance services. And a lot of people went away thinking, why have I never been taught this?
Okay, and what recommendations did we give to GPs as a result of these workshops?
Think about using physiology when assessing not only the very sick with infection, but also those where you're concerned that deterioration might happen.
Mm.
Consider using news scores as a template for that assessment, but be aware that it doesn't have a known positive predictive value.
Okay.
And communicate effectively with your ambulance service or hospital clinicians, using the word suspect sepsis and outlining any deranged physiology.
Okay, so say sepsis, say why you're concerned. Say what's happening. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.